Hello and welcome to the Home of Medicine podcast with me, Dr. Amy Burbridge. Today I am recording this from a semi-warm Athens. We're at the European Congress of Internal Medicine. And today I am joined by...
Hi, Amy. My name is Professor Duro Dicker. I'm the president of the European Federation of Internal Medicine until the end of this Congress. And then I'll become past president. And I'm also the co-chair of the Obesity Management Task Force of the European Association for Study of Obesity.
Fantastic. So you've got quite a busy life and a busy job. Excellent. So we haven't actually done a podcast yet that focuses on obesity. And being as that is your area of expertise, we thought we'd go back to basics and podcast on obesity. So I guess the first thing that we're going to start with, what is obesity and how do we define obesity?
Well, this is a very good question because there is a lot of debate. What is obesity and how we can define it? But I think it becomes very clear that obesity is the malfunction of the adipose tissue that leads to harm for other parts of the body. So there is a lot of definition, there is a lot of debate, but I think most of the association today really acknowledge obesity as a disease, and more so it because obesity defined as a disease, a chronic disease, and a chronic relapsing disease. Okay, so I think this is crucial to understand more than it's just a disease. It's crucial to understand the chronicity of the disease, because we are usually tend to really see it as a very temporary situation or lifestyle. And then we're really failing in treating these chronic relapsing disease.
Absolutely. And another way that we tend to describe it as well is through the body mass index as well, don't we? Is that something that is used as much now in the medical profession?
Again, you're asking a very good question because the issue of BMI is really dealt now very seriously, because we want to go out of this definition of obesity as BMI, body mass index, because we really understand that it's not just the heaviness. In general, you can divide this into two big diseases: the heaviness disease, okay, the weight, and the metabolic disease. And in some case, the metabolic disease comes with a very low BMI, like in lipodystrophy, okay? Meaning that you have disease of the adipose tissue, but without the heaviness. So you don't have to be a heavy person in order to have obesity disease or adiposopathy or adipose dysfunction. So we're trying in the definition to go out from this body mass index indices, because the BMI is a very good epidemiological tool. It's a very bad personal tool.
Okay.
So we really look into it, how we can do it, how we can define obesity, not just by BMI, rather than by the indices of the adiposopathy. So I hope we will try.
Yeah.
And succeed.
So as a internal physician, which is what I am, working day to day with a large population, how do I diagnose obesity?
Okay, so again, we are still diagnosing obesity by BMI.
Yeah.
Meaning if the patient comes to you and his BMI is over 30, so he is diagnosed by BMI as obese, or patients living with obesity, or people living with obesity, because of the cutoff of BMI over 30. But if patient comes to you and his BMI is 27, and you see that he has adiposopathy, how you can see it? If like he has triglyceride is high and his HDL is low, meaning that his adipose tissue is failing in the sense that it's sometimes resemble to insulin resistance. So for me, it's very easy to measure this HDL and triglyceride. And if the ratio between them, triglyceride, HDL is above three, it's a sign of insulin resistance. So if you have insulin resistance, mm-hmm. your adipose is failing.
Right.
Or if you're doing ultrasounds and you have results of fatty liver, it's another sign. So you have a very simple signs that the adipose tissue is failing, mm-hmm. or you have adiposopathy, and then you can really define the patient as obese without the need that he will be above BMI of 30.
So BMI is helpful for epidemiological data, but actually it's quite a crude measurement. And like with any disease, we don't just diagnose with one particular test or one sign of examination. We have to look at the whole picture.
Yes, absolutely. Like an internist.
Absolutely.
We're using yes. holistic medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're looking at you're taking the history,
yes.
you are examining the patient, you are identifying the adipose tissue, whether it be central obesity, whether they're hypertensive, yeah. whether they have, I often find as well, do you find there's a link between peripheral vascular disease and lipodermatosclerosis with obesity?
So you said something very, very true, that if we look on the place that we found this adipose tissue, so there is huge difference between central adiposity, that peripheral adiposity, lower body adiposity, because the lower body adiposity found to be protective from cardiovascular disease, in contrast to a central adiposity and visceral adiposity that absolutely leads to higher increase of cardiovascular risk factors, but not only. We know today that the adiposopathy, the inflammation that is created by this adipose tissue, is harming the organs that it happens, like the liver or the heart. We know that surrounding the heart, we have epicardial adipose tissue, which is a very important adipose tissue that enrich the muscle. It's the source of fatty acid for muscles, for the myocytes, and it protects the coronary artery. But if there is proliferation of this adipose tissue, of the epicardial adipose tissue, and there is necrosis of this adipose tissue, then there is an inflammation process that harms the coronary artery and causing atherosclerosis.
Mm.
This inflammation also harms the myocytes, okay, and causing diastolic dysfunction. So we know that if you have an adiposopathy, or if you have a larger adipose tissue that's not supplied well by blood, so then you start to have necrosis and inflammation. The same happens in the liver, in the pancreas, in the muscle, in the brain, in every organ that you have adiposopathy, you might have inflammation. So this is in the central part of the body. The lower part of the body does not represent such a risk and does not really develop such inflammation that cause harm to other body. So we are really have two different parts of adipose tissue, the central part, the visceral part, and the lower part of the adipose tissue.
Okay, so that's really important. I actually didn't realize that about the lower part of the body being protective. And that's really interesting. And do we know why that is?
I think because if you aggregate or put your calorie in this part of the body, so the this adipose tissue is not so prone to be inflamed.
Oh, okay.
So if you have preferable lower part adipose tissue, it's less inflamed and less harmful.
Mm-hmm.
In contrast to visceral adipose tissue, it is more inflamed and more harmful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so we've made our diagnosis of obesity in our patients by the many different ways in which you've described. And what can we do then? So as an internal physician, who I've got a patient in front of me with cardiovascular disease or many risk factors, what can I do with that patient in front of me?
So The first thing we should do is to start a conversation.
And that's really hard.
And this is very hard, and we have to be very sensitive, very empathic, because a lot of people with obesity feel that it's their blame that they are to be in this situation. And this is disaster, because there is no blame to be people with patients with obesity. There is no blame. And the first thing that we have to convey to the patients is that obesity is a physiological malfunction. It's not them to be blamed. A lot of my patients that I'm starting the discussion with this notion really feel much better, because we are relieving the blame and the shame from them. Because nobody really feel blame or shame to be diabetic patient.
Yeah.
Because they understand that something is wrong in the physiological of their body. So I don't think people with obesity should really feel blame, and but they are. And we should really discuss on this. So we have to start to discuss. And what we found in our Action IO studies, that it takes 6 years between the start treat themselves in their obesity, with their obesity, and until they're coming to the physician and start to talk. In England, it takes 9 years.
Gosh.
So in these 9 years, in those 9 years, the disease is developing. And there is much more risk factors and other diseases that develop because of the obesity. So we have to start much earlier. Yeah. We have to be very sensitive, very empathic, and to raise this issue in our in the patient visits. Now, after we start the discussion, the second sentence that I'm telling my patient is that obesity is a chronic relapsing disease, because they have to understand that the treatment of obesity will be until the rest of their life. There is no cure until now. Maybe in the future there will be.
Yeah.
But now they have to understand this. The third sentence is that we have to put a target, like hypertension, like diabetes. We have to put a target. And my target is between 10 to 15% weight loss.
Over a certain time period?
Or? No, I don't think we have to put a time limit, because then we are pressuring the patients. But I think that we have to put a target. So what I'm really discussing is, it's not your blame. It's a chronic disease, and we have a target.
Yeah.
So now let's see how we are reaching this target. So in fact, we have three targets in treating obesity. The first target is weight loss. Again, the target is between 10 to 15%. And this should be reached by holistic and multidisciplinary team, because it's not just the physician who prescribes the medication. This will fail. It is the dietitian. It is the social worker or psychological help. It is the physical trainer or physical specialist. Okay. And this team should really give this holistic view or holistic treatment for the patient. And this is what we are doing in our clinic. Every patient is evaluated by the physician, by dietitian, by a social worker, and by a physical specialist. So this is the frame of the treatment of weight loss. Now, everyone is focused on weight loss. And in our second podcast, we'll also focus on the weight loss and how to achieve it. But I think one of the reasons that we are failing is because we are concentrated only on one target. And do not understand that we have another two targets. So the third target is preventing or treating other diseases, other complications of obesity. Meaning, if you are reducing 50% and you're a diabetic patient, most probably you can remit your diabetes, or at least really improve the level of glucose control. You can really prevent cardiovascular disease. You can reduce your blood pressure. So if you reach 15%, you can really prevent or treat better the risk factor or other diseases, of course, sleep apnea, etc. So this is the first and the third target. The second target, which in my humble opinion is the most important target, is weight maintenance.
Yeah.
And today we are really focusing into this weight maintenance treatment. And I have a saying that my treatment is MTM. It's management and maintain treatment.
Yeah.
Because we have to really understand that our battle now is maintaining weight loss. We conquer the mountain of weight loss. We have a very efficient and very good tools and very safe tools to reduce the weight at least 10 to 15%. The problem now is to maintain the achievement like after bariatric surgery. It's the same problem. So we have to learn how to maintain weight loss. And this is a whole new medicine because in the past, besides surgery, we didn't have a very efficient tool that helped us to reach such a weight loss targets. But now we have. So if we have, we have to learn how to maintain these achievements. For example, if we give GLP-1, and I give a lot of GLP-1 to my patients.
Is there any particular one that you use?
So we are using the only one that is prescribed for obesity is liraglutide 3.0 milligram. So then after, let's say, 3 to 6 months, patient returned to me and said, look, the drug stopped working. And they stopped taking the drug. So this is a failing of understanding what is the drug doing now.
Mm.
Because now it's a different phase of the drug. Okay, so is the first phase is weight loss. Okay, so now we're reaching a plateau in every modality of treatment of obesity, there is a plateau. We will always reach a plateau. It can be after 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, 2 year, 4 year, five. Never mind. We will reach a plateau because this is a defensive mechanism of the body. So when we are reaching the plateau, doesn't mean that the drug or the surgery stopped working. No, now there is another part, another physiology that we have to keep. And now the drug is functioning as a maintenance drug, okay? Like every other drug. So if you're taking drug that treat hypertension, okay?
Yeah.
So you reduce your hypertension, you reach the target level, and then you keep on taking the drug in order to stabilize the achievement. It's the same with obesity. But until now, we did not perceive that we have to maintain because we did maintain the weight loss because we did not have a very useful tool. And now we have to learn how to deal, how to treat those patients chronically. And this is the secret now.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. When you started to talk about that, I thought about hypertension because I see a few patients who I put on hypertensive treatment and then 2 weeks later or they'll come for review and they've stopped taking it because their blood pressure's better.
Yeah.
And that's partly my fault because I didn't educate them properly about the fact that you're going to be hypertensive probably. It's a chronic relapsing condition.
Yeah.
And it's the same with obesity, isn't it? It's all about that patient education.
Yeah.
And that communication between
Absolutely.
The patient, doctor.
And this is the fourth sentence that I'm telling the patients. I'm telling them, look, don't expect that you will lose weight all the time. You will reach a plateau.
Mm.
Don't stop taking the medication. Then the medication will keep maintain the weight loss. So keep on taking the medication in order to maintain the weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to really discuss all these points before we start.
Yeah.
The treatment. And then the patients are really compliant.
Mm-hmm. What about exercise as another factor of management? So you mentioned it with the patient contact, you know, having contact with the physical therapist and doing exercise. Is there evidence that exercising at the same time as taking the liraglutide or the other medications that we can use works synergistically with medication or is it separate?
So exercise as a tool for treating obesity is a very complex issue because we don't have a lot of randomized controlled trials that really demonstrate the effectiveness. And this is a black hole in this issue. But we know several things. The first one is that exercise does not contribute a lot to weight loss.
Okay.
It's very important to the cardiovascular system, to the cardiovascular health. Of course, nobody doubt it. But as a weight loss tool, is not effective. In contrast, as a weight loss maintenance is very effective. So we have to really, because again, it's two different physiology, because we have to understand the importance of physical activity in weight loss maintenance. We have to put emphasis on this tool in this time.
Yeah.
Okay. And there is study that if you're doing 300 minutes a week, you can really very effectively maintain weight loss even after bariatric surgery. So this is a very powerful tool to maintain weight loss, but very little amount of patients can reach 300 minutes.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
When you think about it, I was just thinking in my head,
yeah.
if you try and do 50 minutes a day, over 6 days, that's a lot.
So this is the problem.
Now, that's a huge amount.
Yeah. So we have to combine it.
Yeah.
Okay. So there is a study in New England that they really examined the combination. So there is lifestyle changes, meaning diet modality and liraglutide 3.0 modality alone, and the combination of liraglutide and physical exercise, intense physical exercise. After 10% weight loss. So they did 10% and they achieved 12% weight loss. And then they randomized the group into diet alone, liraglutide plus diet, and liraglutide diet and physical activity. And mm-hmm. of course, what they showed that the best treatment is the combination of diet, physical activity, and liraglutide in maintaining weight loss. Okay? So the combination is much better than everything alone. So I think physical activity has a crucial role, pivotal role in maintaining the weight loss.
Mm. And you mentioned briefly...
Another thing, and a very important thing is that when you are losing weight, considerable weight loss, you are losing also muscle.
Mm.
And in every age, but certainly in the elderly age, you can become very fragile.
Yeah.
So we don't want to do a weight loss that will lead to fragility. And then the physical activity is crucial. So for elderly people that I'm treating, I always stress the point that they have to do a physical activity, regular physical activity that really adapted for their age. And we have to increase the level of protein they are consuming. So people who are losing considerable percentage of weight have to increase the physical activity and increase the protein intake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because what you don't want is an elderly patient to be losing that muscle mass.
Yes.
Because that's going to increase the risk of falls,
yes,
fractures,
absolutely,
frailty, prolonged hospital stays.
Yes.
And the consequences of that are, again, many.
You know, but very, very interestingly, we did some analysis on the semaglutide and liraglutide, mainly semaglutide studies. And what we showed is that there is no difference in weight loss if we compare elderly to younger people with obesity, meaning the effect of the drug is the same. And when we looked into, in a small group, into the effect of lean body mass, of course, showed that younger people lose less lean mass, but older people lose more lean mass. But the ratio between the fat mass loss and lean mass loss is becoming better, meaning you even in the elderly group, they lose more fat than lean mass. So the ratio between fat to lean become better.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you understand this.
Yes, absolutely.
So even in the elderly, the outcome was positive, even though they lost a little bit lean mass.
Mm-hmm.
This is one thing. The second thing is that apparently there is some studies that shows that GLP-1 has a favorable effect on muscle. So in animal study, when they treat animal with GLP-1 and they denervated the nerve in the muscles, they showed that the GLP-1 had a protective effect on the muscles of the animal. So maybe there is a protective effect of GLP-1 on muscles even in human being. So the net effect is that you are losing weight. Mm-hmm. You also lose a little bit lean mass, but the ratio is better. And maybe there is a favorable effect on muscle structure.
Okay. And finally, I've just got a question about gender differences. So, you know, there's a huge amount of obviously interest at the moment about gender medicine and the difference in the research that is done on women versus men in the different ages. And do we know if there is a different effect of liraglutide on men versus women, or, you know, do women respond differently to the different treatments?
So, again, excellent question. So obesity in women and obesity in men, to my humble opinion, is totally different diseases.
Okay.
Because the physiology is different. Just one example, okay? So if you see the satiety level of women according to the menstrual cycle, okay? Mm-hmm. So we see that in the first part of the menstrual cycle, okay, the estrogen is high and women are much less hungry. Then the estrogen is going down, is reduced, mm-hmm. and the progesterone start to increase. And immediately you see the effect on hunger. Mm-hmm. So there is huge difference between the first part of the menstrual cycle and the second part of the menstrual cycle. So every time that I want to start diet in my patient, I always started it in the first part of the menstrual cycle. Because then it's much more easier for the women to be less hungry. So this is one example. We know that estrogen is a satiety hormone. So in the brain, we know that testosterone is a hunger. I don't know if called it a hunger hormone, but it really imposes a less satiety. Mm. So there is difference and there is a physiological effects on hormone, on satiety and hunger. And what we see is if we can generally that women are much more hungry for sweets and men much more hungry for savory. And my experience is that the GLP-1 works wonderfully on women, much better than men. And I always claimed it. And finally, if you look in subgroup analysis on all the studies with GLP-1, it affects much better on women than men. Now, there is explanation for this in the studies, but in my real life clinic, I see it very clearly. So if women comes to me and I always ask her, how is your habits? And she said, I'm eating a lot of carbohydrates. I like sweets. I know the GLP-1 will help her. This is my phenotyping, you know, I know. And it's almost always works.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know how to explain it, because maybe because GLP-1 works on the frontal cortex and really give empowerment to the decision not to consume sweets. So this is so, and I don't see it so clearly in men. Mm. So I'm sure that there is, and there is a lot of, this is a whole.
I was podcast, just thinking that we could talk about podcast, this for hours about gender differences, and we probably should actually,
There is no doubt there is gender differences in obesity of women and men. And you can look also at the results after bariatric surgery, what happens. So there is difference. And what happens is that in contrast to other area of research, most of the subjects in obesity research are women. Mm-hmm. So if you look on most of the randomized control studies, you will see 60-70% women and 30% men. In other area of medicine, you will see the opposite.
Yeah, I was just thinking that it's the opposite way, isn't it? Yeah.
So it's very interesting, and you have to really, really learn this again. Mm. We are learning a lot because it's a new science. So I'm sure that there is a difference between women. And men.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for recording the first episode in the series on obesity. Great. I have learned so much. It's been really, really interesting. And to be honest, I didn't know a lot of what you've just told me. So I also hope that our listeners out there would have gained as much information and knowledge from that podcast as I did, and are able to take that forward in the management of our patients. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Amy, for all your work in the FIM Academy. It's really a wonderful tool, and hope to participate in more podcasts, and I hope to see you all in all our activity.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
You've been listening to the Home of Medicine podcast, a podcast brought to you by the EFIM Academy in association with the European Federation of Internal Medicine, a leading organisation in internal medicine. Thanks for listening.